As a result of major legislation enacted last year, which took effect in January, farm workers in New York are able to receive overtime pay once they've worked 60 hours per week. That threshold could be lowered next year based on the recommendations of a small, obscure state board that's been soliciting input on the initial implementation of the overtime rules and is required to issue a report on its findings by the end of the year. To discuss this issue, we're joined by Kim Skelke, an upstate New York dairy farmer, and Elizabeth Walters, Deputy Director of Public Policy at the New York Farm Bureau, which represents farmers in New York. Thank you both so much for joining us. And for starters, Elizabeth, you know, from your statewide vantage point, what do we know about the first 8 months of implementation of the 60 hours per week overtime threshold, with the big caveat that COVID-19 has made this year anything but normal and kind of hard to assess?
Yes, everything that we know is pretty anecdotal. It's a new world for farms, and we have, a dichotomy of those farm operations that are year-round, livestock, dairy, and then those that are in seasonal nature who grow crops, and are dependent on the weather. And for many of those, we haven't even seen a full year of impact in terms of what resources are needed in order to fully employ the law.
So, Kim, for your dairy farm, which is a 365-day operation, what strategies have you used to keep your labor costs down since this 60-hour-per-week overtime threshold took effect?
Well, those who worked more than 60 hours on a regular basis previous to 2020, we did change their schedules, tried to reduce hours some. It was a negotiation of a bit between them. We wanted happy employees who felt like they were making enough money, but also realized that we have to keep costs under control. So in the end, I would say we ended up with about 4% of our hours being overtime, which was a meet in the middle somewhere for some of those people to keep them happy. I think we lost two employees who wanted more hours, but that's about it.
Did you have to increase your total number of workers in order to maintain this balance? Because I imagine you still have to get the same number of hours, in grand total to make your farm work.
Right. So we have 30 full-time employees, and we had 29 prior to this year. So it was really just adding one more to kind of achieve that. But you're right.
And you talked about a negotiation. What is that process like? I mean, are the workers unionized, or is it more of an informal arrangement?
No, it's an informal arrangement. We kind of feel like we have a good loyal team that are, largely long term. And so we discussed the situation with them and what the law is. And we started this last September discussing it with them. So by the first of the year, everybody was on board and understanding. And so I think it was just everybody sacrificing a little bit for the greater good.
So at one of the wage board hearings last week, Newsday reported that 16 of 18 people testifying said 3 to 5 years of data will be needed to study the new law before the board really could make recommendations that are grounded in any sort of facts and data. Does that make sense to you, Kim, or do you feel like you know enough about this already after 8 months of implementation?
Well, I think it takes a while for farms to decide what direction they're going to go. Also, if we have unknowns for a few years here, farms might hold back on investing further in their farm. But in particular, the fruit and vegetable farmers, are just getting into harvest season now. And I think they'll have to see how it goes with their staff, how the staff respond. Like, do they come back next year knowing there's some limitations on hours? And so when you get 3 to 4 years from now or 5 years from now, you'll kind of see either how did employees respond and did farms eventually not be able to stand it financially, and do they go out of business? So how do those numbers stack up? It takes a few years for it to all shake out.
From a practical sense, Elizabeth, what does this law, though, have to say about, waiting 3 to 5 years? My understanding that the board needs to hand a report in by December 31st. So would they need the legislature to tweak the law in order to give them more time? And under this current structure, if the board doesn't recommend any sort of changes to overtime, would there be opportunities under the current law for future changes?
So the law allows, it requires this report to be done, you know, within this short year context. And the wage board has the opportunity to say, hey, you know, we need more data. We need more information before, in order to make a recommendation. Or the wage board could say, you know, we have enough data, we'll keep it at 60, or we have enough data and it can go to 40. There are options. We don't need legislative action. The door was left open by the legislature for the wage board to reconvene at a later day, although it does not set for a time frame for that. So there are a lot of possible scenarios that we are dealing with here. And I think all farmers are really anxiously awaiting what the wage board recommends.
And Elizabeth, as you watch this process unfold, what do you think of the makeup of the wage board itself, which includes a representative from the Buffalo Urban League, a representative from organized labor, and your group's head?
You know, I think through the legislative process, we all were hoping that there would be more individuals on the board to provide a broader representation from the agricultural community. But ultimately, this is what the legislature decided on. We're happy to have President Fisher, you know, our organization lead on it as a farmer himself. He has a lot of ability to do outreach and talk to farmers on how this is impacting their farms, as well as listen to the testimony and provide guidance for the board as a whole.
So do you feel like farmers can get a fair shake in this process based on the composition, or do you feel like the deck is stacked against you just heading into this and, you know, a lower threshold is inevitably coming?
I'm hopeful that regardless of the makeup of the board, that they will really look at the industry and the impact that lowering the threshold could have on upstate New York and the economy.
I just also want to add that we had two Democratic legislators, that our Ag Committee head, Jen Metzger and Donna Lopardo, who spoke on our behalf for leaving it the same. And I hope that counts for something going forward, and the wage board is really listening to them as well.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Kim Skelly, an upstate New York dairy farmer, and Elizabeth Walters, Deputy Director of Public Policy at the New York Farm Bureau. And as we consider the future ramifications of lowering the overtime threshold below 60 hours a week, Kim, do you begin to think about what's feasible at like 50 hours a week threshold or 40 hours a week? Is there some sort of arrangement that you could reach, or is that just not even possible?
To me, that changes the landscape of the way we manage our staff, because the amount of overtime on our current schedule would be so exorbitant that we would not be able to swing that. And so then I think we really look at trying to limit overtime or almost have none, realizing that they will probably go and find second jobs in addition, and we will end up hiring more people, probably other people looking for second jobs as well to cover all the work, which is similar to, you know, retail industry, Walmart, and things like that. That's what they do. They just kind of have to limit the overtime.
Do you imagine you'd be able to find the workforce to handle, you know, coming underneath that threshold?
I think it's possible. Again, I think it comes down to how well you manage your workforce, and are you a good employer? The good employers will succeed at that. The ones who struggle managing people will probably struggle being able to fulfill their work needs.
So, Elizabeth, New York is in the process of implementing a multi-year phase-in of a minimum wage increase. How does that affect this whole situation?
I think when we were talking to legislators in Albany, we really tried to get them to look at not just the overtime law proposal, but also to look at the phased-in minimum wage, too, because even where we were at 9.25 before the increases stepped in, we were higher than our neighboring competitive states. And it really had already been an unfair competitive advantage for New York farms in terms of bringing products to market at a reasonable price based on labor rates. So we tried to get them to look at the whole picture, because it's for a farmer, it's an employer, it's not just looking at overtime and then looking at the wage rate. It's looking at the entire impact that both of those increases will have. And so we definitely are expensive when it comes to labor costs. And although farmers often pay above minimum wage, we all know that there is a certain expectation when minimum wage goes up that employees feel that they should also get a raise as well. So it is a challenge. We are an expensive state to operate in, but our farmers are price takers. The commodity prices are no different really here in New York than they are in Pennsylvania, where they have a $7.25 minimum wage.
When you think about the wage board and its future recommendations, do you hope that there's some sort of, you know, flexibility with the way they approach the different types of agriculture? You know, Kim just mentioned dairy farms versus vegetable farms. How do you want them to approach this?
I think ultimately we would like to see it stay at 60 hours. I think, obviously we don't have the opportunity to spin it back. But I think it's difficult because even for dairy farms, they do, a lot of our farms produce their own feed. So they're subject to some of the weather demands as well, being able to pull corn off and beans, soybeans, and be able to do that type of cropping work as well. So, you know, it does impact dairy. When it comes to milking cows, obviously there is a pretty good schedule there. But on the crop side, it really does impact dairy as well. So I think it's good to treat the industry fairly, and having a different set of rules for one versus the other type of agriculture, it could be very difficult to implement in the state.
And are we able to infer anything about the overtime threshold based on California's experience with their own overtime law, which I think took effect in 2019 and is slowly evolving and expanding, I think, through 2022 and beyond?
Yeah, the challenge with comparing New York to California is that our business structures are very different. There was a lot of consolidation already happening in California. So you have larger businesses, larger farms, albeit many are still family owned, but they're able to kind of work through economies of scale a little bit differently. And then the other difference is that they have a much longer growing season. So they're able to kind of, pick up an extra cropping year and be able to weather it, where we have one shot to get a crop, and that's it.
I just wanted to add, they also have more consistent weather, kind of like sunshine almost all the time and irrigated land, so you can turn the water on and turn the water off when you want. That's much easier to work with on the crop side.
Kim, are you suggesting the weather in upstate New York is less than optimal?
It's variable. We do have more free rain than California, whose water is not free.
Variable. All right, though, I'll accept that. Well, we've been talking with Kim Skelly, an upstate New York dairy farmer, and Elizabeth Walters, Deputy Director of Public Policy at the New York Farm Bureau. Thank you both so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Capital Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening.
Join us again for Capital Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.